Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. There's a story in the Bible about two men and two prayers. One man, a Pharisee, loudly told God that he was thankful he wasn't like other men, lacking in faith, a sinner, etc. This guy was proud of his humility and boasted about his level of spiritual maturity. The other man, a publican, whispered to God that he wasn't worthy even to utter a prayer and focused on his shortcomings. He admitted his failings and pled for forgiveness of his many sins. These two gentlemen had something in common. They were revealing their faith in public, something the Almighty wants us all to do. Or does He? Are there times when faith should remain private, hidden, and tucked away safely from the critical eyes? Let's talk with Lincoln Steed about faith, both public and private, and see how each can play a part in guarding our religious freedom. Lincoln, what's your take on this subject, Pharisee or publican?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting split, because many Christians, I think, misunderstand those stories. They think that we're called to be publicans, and the Pharisee was put up as not the ideal person. But the meaning of it was that even this person, so publicly thought to be not religious, not the ideal moral example, could show a more legitimate religious faith than the Pharisee, who was the religious leader. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let me tell you another. You gave a good example from the Bible, but I think once on this program I mentioned something that stuck in my consciousness. It was from the Bloom County cartoon with Opus, the penguin.
Yes.
And they had him running for public office, and he got up front and he says, I believe freedom of religion. He says, yes, I believe in religion. He says, and furthermore, he says, I believe in it 10 to 20% more than my nearest opponent. Yes. And oh, you know, oh, yes, yes, yes. And then he says, and then they asked him a question. And he says, but I, you know, I will not share my personal religious views. And they said, but what do you believe about walrus angels? Because he's a penguin, yes, and walrus. Yes. And he says, oh. Oh, they said, do you believe in walrus angels? Well, yes, of course, he says. And next thing you see him being kicked out of the side of the platform. And he says, conspicuous religiosity is so unpopular.
But you know, you couldn't tell that from our last presidential campaign. It was all over the place.
Well, and that was why the cartoon came forth, because the cartoonist saw that there was a lot of hypocrisy in public religion that perhaps was inappropriate, sometimes even misleading. You know, I must say that even since I gave you the topic to this program, I listened to the President of the United States, presently President Obama, gave a very nice presentation at the National Prayer Breakfast, which, you know, you can, as we have done in Liberty Magazine, discuss the appropriateness of such an event held close to the chest of any administration. Mm-hmm. But given that exists, and he spoke there, I thought he gave a very well-balanced presentation. Well, more than one balanced. It was correctly balanced from a personal perspective, but not mixing it with his responsibilities as president, nor in making any pronouncements about the religious identification of the country or where its laws would go or whatever. But contrary to some of the rumors, you know, he gave a very unabashed personal representation of himself as a young man brought up in an irreligious background, nominal at best, anti-religious at worst, cynical of religion until, as a growing young man in Chicago, he listened to the preachers presenting Jesus and so on, and then he says he accepted Jesus as his personal savior, and he says it wasn't, you know, an epiphany moment, but he said it sort of took root in his heart. He realized the truth of the gospel, the truth of what God wanted to do through man, and I thought it was very natural, so I didn't mind that. Mm-hmm. But there is something unsettling about a public figure who will sort of wave around almost like a cudgel their own religious viewpoint, and it's a challenge rather than a witness. And you can see that given half a chance, they might knock you over the head with it.
Yes, yes. And that is the red flag, of course, we see in this every time. Should we just remain quiet? Is it our our responsibility, Lincoln, as Christians, to just sort of keep this close to our chests and let other people just guess that we're Christians and that we're religious?
No. And let me come at the president another way.
Yes.
Well, I think we had a whole program on it once, but a number of us have been troubled. This administration of late have taken to saying rather than religious freedom, they've spoken about freedom of worship.
Yes, yes.
Now, freedom of worship could be that private thing with a few of your religious peers and whatever affiliation you have, comforting, nice moment in a building, but then you either say nothing outside, or if it's the state determining it, then you know, you're to keep quiet and obey by rules of silence. Religious freedom is a lot messier. Religious freedom might mean that you do what I personally object to. You speak too much about your religion.
Yes, yes.
Which might be as bad manners as it is to talk too much at a party and become a bore. You could become a religious bore, but it has to be allowed. That's natural religious expression. And when I look back on the rise of Christianity, those 11 apostles, there was one that went astray early on, but the 11 of them, they went out and told everybody what had happened to them. Yeah. And that sort of a true, honest repetition of your own experience has the ability to change people. You know, and if you really are cynical about it, maybe cynical is the wrong word, but, you know, realistic about it, Amway and other, you know, social networking systems work as well. It's always powerful when somebody shares their inner thoughts and their inner motivations and basically exposes themselves to criticism or acceptance. That has a certain power, and we should be allowed to do that. But this idea that just religion is to be kept away from real life is to misunderstand the separation of church and state, and I believe to misunderstand religion itself.
But isn't the fact that we express our religion, we express our love for God, that can get us in trouble in some countries. That can get us killed in some countries if we choose to change religions or join a religion. I'm trying to figure out here, when is the time to stay silent and when is the time to speak? Because when we speak, sometimes we get in big trouble.
It's true. I mean, within some level of give and take, like many things that you and I do in daily life, we have to judge the moment whether it's appropriate to say or do something, whether it's religion or anything else. But any religion, any global or cosmic viewpoint that we have, if it's worth anything, it's worth telling other people about when the moment is right. Mm-hmm. And to tell ourselves the moment has never been ripe or right for most of our life, you know, is to fool ourselves. It might not be right now, but if it's not right at some point in the next few days or, you know, as a yes. continuum of time, then I really got to examine whether I believe it enough. And I think it's very plain, as Jesus said, that we're to let our light shine, that men will see your good works and recognize the Father that you serve. Hmm. Even as I say that, I know the Bible used the image of salt, which is a little more secretive, even if the palate understands it.
True.
But still, we clearly are to make a difference verbally, I think, in the world around us. Again, I may have said this on another radio program, but this is a good time to bring up again what I discovered in Laos, a small, largely forgotten country in Southeast Asia that has gone over to doctrinaire communism. Religion is not very free there. It's an understatement.
Yes.
You will be imprisoned there for giving out Christian literature. It's not an if, it's a certainty if someone reports you. And I found one church company there that were doing all right, not being persecuted, but I found out that they would go along on their day of worship. They would sing the hymns, they would share with each other, they would quote Bible verses. But once they left that building, they would do nothing, say nothing to bring attention to themselves. And that troubles me mightily. That's an unhealthy form of religion, I believe.
Yeah.
Religion cannot flourish nor even long survive. It's a hothouse plant at best if it's just kept within four sealed walls.
Is this expression of religion the cause of religious persecution? Or is it the result of religious persecution? Do you say your love for God because you know you can get in trouble for it, or because you know you can't get in trouble for it? I'm curious to know, as you've traveled around and see people.
You put your finger on the real nitty-gritty of anyone when they're faced with a situation. They have to examine why they do it.
Yeah.
And there are some people, that religion or otherwise, they're provocateurs. And yes, we're not called to bring down retribution on our heads just because of our faith. But there is an inevitability if you have a faith and you're willing to share it. Something will happen at some point, even if you don't. And this is the irony of that church that I was mentioning. I don't think they will escape unscathed forever, because the word will eventually get out. Mm-hmm. And they'll have missed the opportunity to share their faith but still suffer the persecution. Mm-hmm. I'm quite convinced that we need to, but we shouldn't think that we create the problem. Now, again, the Bible says, and it's applicable to other religions, I think, because it's a dynamic of religious faith, says the devil, your foe, goes about as a roaring lion, and all who live a godly life will suffer persecution. Anybody, even a Buddhist, if they go seeking nirvana and that, they will separate from society. They will not be seen positively.
Mm. How would you describe, Lincoln, the atmosphere of religious freedom or tolerance or intolerance in the life of Christ? I want to look at Christ's life and see how he did it. How did he express himself? How did he express the true religion that he understood in his heart in an arena that, as far as I'm concerned, was not very tolerant of religious freedom? Am I right?
That's true. I just wrote an editorial for Liberty Magazine on this,
yeah,
and I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going to have to. It's ironic to try to reconstruct your own thought. But, trying to get to grips with the same dynamic, and I went to one of the Gospels where it spoke there of Jesus going into the synagogue and teaching, and his enemies were all gathered around. They were the religious leaders who were distinctly at odds with him. Almost from the beginning, they saw his view of heaven and God and how man should relate to that as threatening.
And he knew that when he went into the synagogue, he knew
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. So he, right up front, you know that it's obvious in every case that he didn't seek to dodge the issue.
Right.
But he didn't just stick his head in the noose purposely. When he seemed to do that, he was trying to make a point with them. And so he was in there teaching, and I think it was a crippled, but anyhow, a man with some physical infirmity came up to him, and in front of, this was on the Sabbath day, the holy day, where they wouldn't even walk very far, certainly not carry a handkerchief, because that was working
it's
on
a stuff. Burden.
he made the comment, is it better to do good on the Sabbath day? They weren't so sure about that. So he heals this guy. And the Bible says that they were inflamed. They were inflamed with anger against him and sought from that moment how to kill him.
To kill him, yeah.
And yet he did a very good thing.
Yeah.
But could he not, when someone came asking for healing? He didn't really choose the person. The good deed was waiting to be done. He would have had to have done a bad deed in refusing it. And so I think all Christians are in that realm. We shouldn't go out of our way to antagonize those that might have a contrary view, but we shouldn't allow them to restrict how we go about practicing our faith. You know, as the U.S. Constitution says, free exercise. It shan't be impeded
or inhibited. There's a difference between sharing a faith and proselytizing. Identify where the line is crossed when you're sharing your faith and you're proselytizing. Where's the line?
Well, it really isn't much of a line. It's which side of the line you're speaking from as to which word you use.
Interesting.
Somebody that belongs to a faith and is trying to protect it, probably misguidedly, but they see it as proselytizing.
Yes.
With an italic and a exclamation point after it. You know, they don't like it.
Yes,
the person that has the faith, they're under, even if not direct command from their holy book, they're under an inner compulsion to share it. Anything good you have, you want to tell someone else about it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Even if it's, I tasted the real thing. You know, sounds like I'm on an ad. But you know that advertisers tell us all the time. You want to tell you've got a great product.
Yes.
So you know, how can you inhibit that in human beings? But there are religious societies around the world, or societies that have a religious influence that have allowed it into law, where they will actually restrict the right of someone to share another faith, and thereby persuade someone to join them in that faith. It's illegal. You know, and I don't know if I've mentioned it on this program yet, but we're still living through some of the changes in the Middle East, and we're all very hopeful about Egypt.
Yes.
We don't know where that'll go, but not long before the events of January and following, there was a Pew survey made of people in Egypt, and something like 85-90% of respondents said that they would be happy with the death penalty against conversion in their country.
Really? Really?
So the lay of the land is quite clear with that society. Mm-hmm. They may have what passes for religious freedom under any new government, but that's only because most people are of the same view, but they will not grant it to someone else.
Well, that surprises me, Lincoln, because there's a recent article in Time magazine that talks about the new revolutionaries around the world, young people. And the message of young people seems to be one of tolerance, one of let everyone do their thing. It's sort of like the 60s all over again. Let people believe the way they want to believe. Isn't that the way young people are today? Who were these 90% that were saying these
things? Well, you give me a loaded question because I can't claim to be young anymore. But I'll draw a parallel even within my own religious community. We have liberals and conservatives, yes, and I think they're a standard. And my judgment is that the people that label themselves liberals, the so-called open-minded, when the chips are down, they can be every bit as closed-minded and perhaps more so.
Really?
Because in their pursuit of openness, they will be merciless against what they see as the closed-minded. It's very hard for all human beings to grant to someone else freedoms that they're not comfortable with. And so I don't think it's a matter of young or old. Yes, the young are throwing off certain constraints. But as I say, and I don't really know on the survey, you would presume that any survey worth its salt, they'd done a cross-section of the society.
Yeah.
But it doesn't ring false to me. Even of a modern viewpoint, that person could still want to protect their religion and their society, would be comfortable with such a law, not believing, referring to my earlier comment, that it would really impact the society much, because they were all pretty much of a general common viewpoint. And we know in Egypt, since we seem to have gotten onto it now, that their overwhelming majority Muslim or nominal Muslim, the largest minority is the Coptic Christian, which everyone disputes the percentage, but it may be as little as about 10%. But the larger majority had not shown much willingness to grant the Copts the full freedom of religion, which in my view is the real kickoff for the issues in Egypt.
Really?
Because January 1, there was this huge explosion at a Coptic church in Alexandria, which most people saw as an omen for the months between then and the September elections.
Now, as this fire seems to be spreading, you're watching it, of course, on the news, as it seems to be spreading across North Africa and other countries in the Middle East. What is driving this? Are these religious issues that we're seeing here as well?
I believe so.
Really? Really?
And so you heard it here, people.
That's right.
And that's really what I was, I wrote an editorial on. And I used a soft approach with the Jesus and the issue that we discussed earlier. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, the inflamed passions that Jesus' actions evoked. And then I quoted Obama and the Pope, beautiful statements on religious freedom at the beginning of the year. But in reality, and then everybody thinking well or hoping for the best in Egypt and elsewhere, seeing this as a civil insurrection. Mm-hmm. And what evidence is there from this area that civil issues are the real text? I said this is an area that has been defined by its religious zealotry through the ages. It's been defined by its battle against colonialism and that era, which it's defined as the overlordship of the Christian West. They identify that all as Christianity. Right. The whole narrative there is religious, not spiritual.
That's right.
But it's
that's
a religious
right. Yes.
Identity.
Yes.
And to ignore that now is to really miss the whole point. They don't have to be, you know, waving prayer flags, although it's very portentous that they even paused the demonstrations in Egypt for the prayers. And I noticed that they all surged out of the mosques when they first began the demonstrations. It originated in the mosques, which is not in itself mystical, because that's the community gathering point for society. Yeah. But that's where it was discussed and it emanated from. And it's their right. You know, there's religious self-determination, but we should not fool ourselves in the West into thinking that the narrative of the world is purely secular and that separation of church and state, which we ourselves seem to be arguing against, exists there. It doesn't.
Well, as we continue studying the life of Christ and looking at how he treated those who were intolerant of him, what are the lessons can we learn? You mentioned that he did not dodge the issues. He seemed to be aggressive to a point. What was constraining him? What was motivating him, Lincoln?
Well, you know, I don't have the answers for all of us in dealing with a complex world, obviously. Someone would be paying me more money if I knew everything. But, you know, I'm paid to study the Bible.
Yes.
And religious influences. And as a Christian, obviously I'm set to promote freedom of religion for all people, but I do it from a Christian perspective. And I think we're under compulsion to share. We're not under compulsion to aggravate people, even though that sometimes is a side benefit of sharing. But I do believe the key is what Jesus did. And it says somewhere in the Bible, I believe, and I've read it a number of times, it says he went about as someone who desired their people's good. And we will still get into trouble. You know, a lot of people don't like do-gooders. But it will be greatly minimized in our dealings of our religious faith, which should permeate all of our dealings, if we're seen as someone that's not antagonistic, is against that person, that we want the best for them. They can reject it. They may not think it's the best for them, but they don't as easily reject and persecute us. It'll at least be the best way of going about our faith. And very often people of all faiths, Christians are hardly immune from this, are very guilty of you know, this is for your best, you take it, or you're going to give freedom, we demand it, and all that. We have to have some charity, but charity is in the manner of that we respect that other person, and if they're wrong, you know, we're going to say so. But it's not because we think that we're above all laws and that our view must be transcendent. It's because as a fellow human being, we respect them and we want them to have the same rights and understandings that we have.
Well, let's get a little report card from you, Lincoln. The religious movements in this country, here in America, where we live, you identified four items that need to be on the list of anyone who wants to publicly reveal their love for God. They don't dodge the issue, they share their faith, they don't aggravate people, and they desire people's good. How are we doing in this country? How is the Protestant movement, the Catholic movement, the Adventist movement, how are we doing, in your opinion?
Well, you know, we have to speak corporatively. You and I know, and some of our viewers have clear evidence in their lives and dealings with others, that there are individuals who, you know, we could almost think them saints in the traditional sense. There's people that are wonderfully caring in their own personal spirituality and relate well to other people. As far as the larger movements and the mood of the country, I think it's not good.
Really?
Because what I keep mentioning in Liberty and the editorials particularly is people need to see the distinction between religiosity and spirituality. And there is an increase in religiosity in the United States. It's been some decades coming. It took a distinctly political turn in the 70s with the rise of the religious right. A lot of bold talk about, you know, right to life and stuff like that. But when the chips are down, I don't see much increase in the public sphere in the spirituality that more naturally encourages what I'm saying, a real concern for other people and tolerance and finer human virtues, because that's what it leads to. It makes more people more human.
Yes.
And more caring. And we are in great need of that. We've had a flirtation only a year or two behind us where we thought we could sort of Christianize the world through conflict or through conquest. most people understand that wasn't the right way now. But I'm not sure they learned the right lesson from it. We just saw that it was erroneous.
Yes.
But somehow, and whether it will do the full trick, I couldn't say, but somehow the Christian West needs to withhold itself from getting enmeshed in what's going on in the Arab world, but project an expectation of greater spiritual values that will lead to openness, charity, and so on, but without saying that we're going to force it on them. Because if there's one cultural connection that intersects with religion, they are very resistant to the idea that the crusader or the colonial master or whoever is going to impose any value.
I think we have a valuable lesson to learn from Christ's life in that the way he proclaimed his faith privately and publicly did not keep him out of hot water, did not protect him from the...
It led to the cross.
Led to the cross. That's where it took him. So we really should not think that our goal is to make everything right and everything soft and wonderful. Our goal is not to convert the world. Our goal is to what? In one sentence, what is our goal as Christians? Looking at what we just talked about, what is our goal?
Well, if we're talking about Christians, our goal is to exemplify Christ.
But regardless of what happens, regardless of what happens to us.
And it won't always lead to less in controversy, but it should be from the right point of reference. You know, Jesus himself said, "Think not I've come to bring peace, I've come to bring a sword." He didn't mean he would bring violence, but this message is a separator. And it inflames someone who doesn't wish their neighbors well. You know, if someone's already a Gaddafi dictator, for example, he's going to probably shoot 10 protesters rather than five when he sees that there's some power and sincerity in your viewpoint. But in the long run, if not absolutely here on this earth, but in an eternal kingdom, the principles that Christ came to bring are the ones that will solve society's ills and humanity's ills.
Well, those are certainly words that we need to hear these days, these troubled times. As Christians, our faith needs to be shared. We need to follow the template of Christ as we do that. Very, very good. Very good, Lincoln. Thank you so much for being with us today. www.libertymagazine.org. Subscribe to the magazine. You can learn other information about the movement of religious liberty around the world. Lincoln Steed's editorials are there as well, and articles, a lot of good stuff.
And
right
you can
there.
Leave feedback on our website. We'd love to hear from you.
There we go, and we'll address it on future programs, too. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Lincoln Steed, saying, may you rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.